Ed McCurdy wrote has become famous, well known. If you go to books on missions in church history, if you go to the internet, the other day I was on the internet looking up some information, and there was something, sayings and devotions from famous Christians. This letter, three parts of this letter were there. And I think it's an important letter to read because it has something to do with what I want to say this morning. So I appreciate it, Micah. And just for an introduction, we do this every year, not because, well, Ed was from here, and because he was famous, and it's our only claim to fame. This is church history. This is true history. It's not like saying, well, the 218 Packer season is history. Not history. It's baloney, maybe, but not history. History makes an impact. People, events, good or bad. Hitler is important in history. I know. But he, good or bad, has made impact. And these sort of things become important to us. And it's the same thing with the missionaries. Their lives and what they did in their death has made an impact. Bible schools, seminaries that teach about mission, that teach church history mission, that talk about a particular powerful events in church history. I'll quote these, talk about these men. So we're talking not about just some local parochial thing that we want to remember. We're talking about something that's made an impact and hundreds of lives and is still discussed, the pros and cons of it. So that's one of the reasons why it's important for us to remember every year. We have information back in the library. And, of course, that information is to stay in the chapel. The Quints have some precious things that go way back. At Ed McCulley's memorial was the Milwaukee Arena. A couple weeks after he was murdered, Gus Quint, Jimmy's dad, led in prayer. Several of the men who spoke, I knew. Now, I was just a young punk, but I knew these men. Phil Clarkson from camp, and, of course, Bill McDonald. So, it was an important thing and something for us to remember. Now, let me just give you, before I go into the body of what I want to say, let me just give you some ideas what has gone on. There have been 11 plus books written about Jim Elliot, or that mentioned Jim Elliot. 6 plus books about Nate Saint, the pilot from Missionary Aviation Fellowship, who had been a bomber pilot in World War II. 2 books on Peter Fleming. But there has never been a book on Roger Darien, and there's never been a book on Ed McCulley. Now, a few years ago, a man came through by the name of Anthony Salas. He had a burden to write a complete story. He's given up. And the reason he's given up is because the information he needs and wants, he can't get his hands on, particularly with Roger Udarian. Now, I know the Udarians. I know Roger's wife, Barbara. My nephew married Roger Udarian's daughter, Beth. I've talked to Barbara several times. Fortunately, I had this opportunity, and they won't give up any information at all on Roger. They're keeping all of his journals, and the journals are to be burned when they die. If one reads other books, Roger Udarian is mentioned in other books, particularly by an MAF pilot that was in Ecuador in Peru. And the description of Roger Udarian is really interesting. But the family doesn't want to release them, and that is their prerogative. They have every right to do what they want. But I think it's a shame. Nevertheless, I'll mention that a little bit. So, there have been none written on Udarian or McCulley. All five of them have been mentioned in anywhere from 50 to 75 books about missions in church history. And there's probably more. But there's been no new books since 1998, no new writings. And that's one thing that Anthony South was thinking about. All right. When I taught at New Tribes Bible School a few years ago, I taught missions in church history. The textbook is really good. But the person who wrote the book had a bug on, if I can put it this way. The person strongly believed in mission boards and central authority. And in the first edition of the book, the person made these missionaries look like they didn't know what they were doing. That the reason they failed is because they did not have leadership over them. That's an issue, of course, in New Testament principles and missionary principles. In her second edition, I also used that in New Tribes, she left the whole thing out. And she gave a couple of real nice paragraphs. I have a feeling somebody got on her case. Somebody got on her case and really boiled her out. So they're not looked at as absolutely favorable to everybody in the Lord's work. She thought they were just a bunch of rogue freelancers and that they had no discipline and they did what they wanted. Well, there's a lot of opinion, but these men's lives, their lives, their upbringing, their death creates a lot of conversation. And in any missionary training course, their methods and the way they work and their deaths are talked about. So it's become quite important. There are myths about this as time goes on. There are myths. That's what happens in history. Historians are always reading because there's new things, there's old things, and some things grow that weren't true. Now, I want to say this. There have been some things passing around for the last 12 or 15 years that aren't true, at least as far as I'm concerned. The thing that was said is that when the men were killed, the Indians could see above the trees lights, like angels, and they could hear music. I don't accept that. And there's only one source where that come from. second of all, that one of the Indians almost got shot in the head. A bullet went past his head. Now, there are two men capable of using firearms, and they had guns. Roger Udarian was a paratrooper during the Battle of the Bulge and knew how to use firearms, and so did Nate Saint. According to what was first mentioned is that they shot in the air in order to frighten the Indians, but they were killed. They obviously let themselves be killed. They could have shot the Indians, murdered them. The Indians were well aware of firearms, believe it or not. There had been many, many attempts, as well as oil company down in the jungles of Ecuador called Shell Mida. The oil men all walked around with guns and firearms because sometimes the Aucas would come across the river and raid them. They were a vicious people. All right, those are some things. Those are ideas. But as history goes on, life goes on, we'll see how this grows. Now, I have a different purpose this morning. I just want to give some introduction. Three of the men, and this is what I want to talk about. It's touchy, really touchy, but it's important. Three of the men were opposed by family. Three of them had family members and friends oppose their call to the mission field. And one of them was Ed McCullough. Roger Udarian, family opposed him. Now, a little bit of information on these men may help us understand. Udarian's father was a rancher, actually, in the Lewistown area of Montana. Jeff Takas is a Bible study there. And what Jeff has found out that even though, I mean, the place isn't a Christian community or anything, but even though many years have passed, Roger Udarian is like a hero in the area. You mentioned Roger Udarian. I was there. They asked me what church I was from. I told them. I mentioned about Ed McCully. Right away, they talked about Roger. Roger's father was a rancher. I don't think there's any evidence that Roger's father was a believer. Roger had a slight touch of polio when he was a boy, and he had a limp. And but Barbara said, Barb Udarian said, it wasn't as bad as the books make out. I'll accept what she said. He enlisted in World War II in 1943 and became a paratrooper. And he jumped at the Battle of the Bulge. If you know World War II history and the Battle of the Bulge, wow. That was mean. It was an awful battle. And he won a medal for that. He was determined. From the writings of others, he was a well-disciplined man. He was strong. Of course, he had been heroic. And he was strong, and he was saved in England during the war. And after he became a Christian, wasn't long after he became a Christian, he decided to become a missionary. Now, should be understood also that World War II created renewed interest in foreign mission. Many, many soldiers, many men in the military, became interested in taking the gospel to other people. Nate Saint was a bomber pilot, and almost immediately after the war, flying a light plane in the jungles. So, excuse me. And so these many people turned out to mission, and Roger Udarian did. His father wanted to give him the ranch. His father wanted him to take over the ranch, and Roger told him he was going to be a missionary. And apparently there was some tension. I have a feeling Barb hinted but then didn't hint that some of these things are in the journals and they just don't look real good. But I think his father opposed him strongly. Now, Roger was, as I said, disciplined, strong, determined man. But he was sensitive. He was a very sensitive man. Easy to become discouraged, looking at what he's accomplished. What have I accomplished? What am I doing here? Why isn't anything happened? So he was questioning his call. But at the same time, the stress from his father's disagreement with him was hurtful. All right, that is Roger Udarian. Pete Fleming, we've had Ken Fleming here from Emmaus Bible School, and Ken Fleming's his brother. And Pete Fleming was a scholar, an intellect, and a dedicated Christian. He had received degrees in literature. He was prepared to teach at a university. He had been involved with InterVarsity, Campus Crusade, Youth for Christ, Navigators, Young Life, and he had an extraordinary gift of talking to students and able to talk to them about aspects of the Christian faith. So he was qualified, gifted. It was already assumed by parents that he was going to be a university professor, a speaker on university campuses, and a well-known speaker in America. That's where the opposition came. This is what God has for him. and he's going to be good at it. God can't do anything else. All right? So, he also has some quotes floating around in daily devotionals and other books. But Pete Fleming was expected to be a university professor, a dynamic speaker on campuses, and a man who will make a great impact among students, win many students to the Lord. His family and the McCulleys were friends. They had spent some time in Seattle, and they were friends, and they were alarmed. Let me put it this way, it'll come out that a lot of people didn't like Jim Elliot. I've been around guys like Jim Elliot, and they're on fire, man. Jim Elliot, from early on, wanted to be a missionary, and all he did was train. He took Greek in college at Wheaton just to discipline his mind, languages. He was a wrestler to discipline his body, and he was on fire to be a missionary. And Pete Fleming knew him. So the families at one time decided to get together, and how can we keep Jim Elliot away from our sons? He's influencing them too much. When I first read that, I thought to myself, I don't believe that. I'll tell you why. Because these men were smart, godly. And they're suggesting that a powerful personality took control of their will and their minds, like a cult leader. Anyway, it's interesting, see. In the early 50s, Jim Elliot came here. Ed McCulley and his dad, they lived up there on Swan Boulevard, and he was painting the McCulley's house and talking about mission field. And the McCulley's weren't really happy. Now, there's some humor in this, because if you read the journals of Jim Elliot, he mentioned speaking here. He also mentioned by name some speakers. I had never heard of them, and not important. But he didn't like them. He didn't like them. He says, same tradition, mumbling along, never excited about what they're saying, giving the traditional argument, mumbling. Okay. Where's the excitement? Where's the fire? And there's a lot of truth to that. He made fun of guys who were, while they were speaking, take their glasses off and talking and wiping their glasses. And I can see guys like that. See. But this letter that Micah read was written to Jim Elliot one morning after Ed McCulley got off of work. Ed McCulley was in law school. During vacation, he worked in a motel up on Highway 100. I don't know which one it was. And he liked working night because he could study. He wanted to read the Bible. So he wrote this letter one morning after he came home from work. He apparently decided to take a long way home. The only thing I can imagine, it's not a big deal, is I can see him walking to the parkway, Hanson Park, and along the river, thinking and praying. So he came home, and he wrote this letter to Jim Elliot. This is 6 years before they were killed. One of the statements he makes in the letter, I think is important. It jumps out at me. It says, on the way home yesterday morning, I took a long walk and came to a decision, which I know is of the Lord. Now here's the quote. In all honesty before him, I say that No one no one or no thing beyond, nothing beyond himself and the Word has any bearing upon my decision. That is a reference to his opposition to the Father. It's important to him to get that out. Nobody's influence, nothing. This is a decision I have made, and I believe it's of God. Many times young people have to do that. There's more opposition from parents and kids going to mission field than you care to believe. It's true. And it's important to make it clear, no, this is not a strong personality. It's not a cult leader. It's not this, it's not that. This is something that God has put in my heart. So he starts his letter off to make it clear. Nobody or anything has any other influence on me but the Word of God. And many young people have had to do that because parents are not generally enthusiastic about seeing their children who are well-educated, well-qualified for success, decide to throw it all away and go to mission field. So that's one of the first things he says. Now, he made this decision. It was irrevocable, absolutely irrevocable. Right now, I don't know exactly what to do. What I have in mind is to stay around here a year working in the assembly and studying on my own, right here in this fire trap. See, I mean, we've remodeled it, but it's a fire trap, folks. All right. I'm going to stay here in the assembly, and I'm going to study, and I want to learn about God's work. I want to talk to people more. I want to witness more. I want to reach out if I can. Somebody told me when Anthony Sauce was here, a couple of people who knew Jim Elliot were still around, and they told Anthony Sauce that Ed McCulley, before this decision, was sort of an arrogant young man. Now, you have to understand, young, qualified people are generally arrogant in a certain way. Come on. He was an outstanding athlete. He had never ran track or football in high school, played football. He was an out flanker back at Wheaton. He set a track record at Wheaton. He was exceptional. One can understand young people. Well, that's kind of a family pride, right? Wow. And I'm going to be a lawyer, and I won a speech contest from all of America. The Hearst newspapers had a contest in San Francisco. He was one of the finalists, and he won. He won an award, and he won some finances. And so there were a lot of things. He was likable. He was a good speaker. He was involved with youth. So it's not knocking him. Youth has a chip on their shoulder. Come on, and don't tell me they don't. Most of them have a chip. If they're good, they have a chip on their shoulder. Okay. And they said that after he made the decision and made it known, he was an entirely different man. Still had the same gifts and abilities, but he was so focused and so sure of what God wanted that in his dealing with other people, there was a humility that he wasn't even aware of. This decision gripped his heart in such a way there is no turning back, and it changed him. And I understand that too. Because decisions that are often wrestled with and made, once they're made, God works in us in ways that we never even bargained for or understood. So he was a typical young man, but really good at what he did. And so he was going to stick around, and he did. Can you imagine that? Well, why don't you keep going to law school? You could go to law school and keep sticking around here. No, part of the decision was to go, it was in the second year at Marquette, to go down the day of registration and tell people why he wasn't coming back. That was a courageous thing. One of the professors, he told, cried, was deeply moved by his commitment. Another one he told simply said, "See ya, have a good lunch," and went back to his work. What he was doing is he was taking this thing that God broke through, and his life was moving in a direction, completely taken up with it. But there had been opposition. He was supposed to be a lawyer. Now, I can see him in Milwaukee, go to law school, a good Christian lawyer. He's honest. He does a good job. He loves the Lord, and when he has opportunities, he will share his faith with us. Kind of a one call, that's all things, say. You'll get law and you'll get spiritual stuff like that, say. Well, he didn't do it. And the opposition was something that comes out in the writings. It hurt. But you see, parents love their children. Parents train their children. They see what their kids can do. They see the potential, the gifts. And they visualize using it for the Lord. And the mission field is a waste. No, it's not. Not a waste at all. So, these are some of the things these men faced. It hurts. It hurts when parents don't agree. So, these three people faced some opposition, and it was hard for all of them. Roger Udarian apparently was affected by this all the rest of his life. The others, Pete Fleming and Ed McCauley. Theo McCauley wrote some things that are up in our boxes back there that fully support his son and talk about his son and what kind of man his son was. So you can see the parents understood that God was doing something special for him. All right. One of the things that happened with the death was understandable. Why would God take such gifted, talented men? Jim Elliot could have been a mission leader among the assembly, and he could have done. Wow. And Nate Saint, having flown bombers during the war and flying, was an expert flyer. He invented things that made it easier for the jungle pilots to land. When he landed on the beach, Palm Beach, he took a huge risk. If the sand, it was during the dry season, but if the sand was too soft, the plane would flip over. And he was an excellent pilot. And he could have been a pioneer and leader in many things. So, what happened? Why? What a waste. First of all, of course, from my viewpoint, being an ex-missionary, I would say very carefully, it wasn't a waste. It's how we look at it. Think about this. If those men would have made contact and written the Alka language, the only people who would know about it was Plymouth Brethren people. It would be in our mission magazine. It would hardly be known. Really. The news would have stayed among us. Here are on a Wednesday night report. Ed McCauley, today we translated five phrases in Alka, and I'm having a hard time with past tenses, and some of them are driving me bananas. But that's all. Nobody else would have known. Because it usually doesn't go outside of our mission circles for any mission board. These men were killed. And immediately, from day one, the whole world knew. I was an unsaved boy here in Milwaukee, but I remember the Milwaukee Journal headlines. Every day for a week, 5 bodies missing. Body of so-and-so found. Picture of a body floating in the water. This or that. All week long reading it. Everybody read it. The whole city of Milwaukee was interested in this. And I remember looking at this, thinking about it, but not paying much attention. But after I became a believer and became interested in missions, I immediately wanted to know more. So, these dead men brought attention. That bright, talented, capable people are called to die to self. Where does the idea come from that if we have those abilities, if we put them aside, we're failing Christ? We're failing what God has given to us. Who said? These guys gave their lives. Dying to self, to them, was a biblical mandate. And even Ed McCulley mentioned, he said, you know, he thought about it, and he said, I saw things a little differently before, and it wasn't bad. But now I see as I've never seen before. And our lives must be given to the Lord in any way we can, in any way He leads. So it's very interesting. So it's still a biblical mandate. There are other questions that come up. Why would God do this? Well, look at what's happened. I was in Columbia in 1965. Like, what? 9 years after they were killed. And in Bogota, this is how I got, by the way, got to know the assemblies. Because in Bogota, there was a team of young people from Emmaus Bible College in Chicago. And I met them by accident at a tourist attraction. One day I was studying Spanish, and I had it right up to here. I closed my books, and I grabbed some pesos, and I got on a bus, and I went out to a tourist attraction. And there this group of people were, a lot of them, all from Emmaus. Many of them already college grads. Roger Hoffman, Marsha Vanderlyn, Billy Loudon was here, his dad, Bill Loudon, others. Helmut Charlie Haltridge, and others who went to Japan. And I had heard, as time went on, that that class in those years in Emmaus had more impact in missions than it had been in 100 years. Two reasons are given credit. Bill McDonald, the president of the school, he spoke at Ed McCulley's memorial, moving. And he kept this before the young people. And second of all, the 5 martyrs were so close. Some of these kids, some of these people were there in 64, might have been, were still in school, maybe high school, and went off to college. A great missionary movement started. What happened after World War II, there was so much interest in missions that it looked easy. Some felt that one of the reasons God took these men is to show that it takes full consecration of your life and loss of what you are or what you can be to take the gospel out. And it hasn't changed. Not at all. Now, a little bit more. I must close here. As I said before, had these men been successful, nobody would know of them, except in our circles as they went around to preach. Some verses quickly. Ephesians 6, 1 to 4. Wrong book. 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long in the earth. All right, now. That's absolutely true and necessary, isn't it? And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. I want to suggest something to you this morning that may make you cringe. I believed it, and I still believe it. We're to raise our children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Part of that goal is to keep them from falling into sin and habits and addictions and making stupid decisions in their lives, and they have to live with them all their lives. And I've known many because of my background. Nevertheless, the children grow to maturity and understanding. There's something we forget. Here it comes. Those kids were never ours. God entrusted them to us. This is what I want you to do. This is how you're going to bring them up. I want them that way so I can talk to them and lead them. And once they reach an age, you have absolutely no jurisdiction over them. Now, you may not believe that. It's true. Cling. These men were hurt for a while. In other words, we bring them up. God says, I trust these children to you. They're yours to do certain things, but they're mine, ultimately. There comes a time when I want to speak to them. I want to lead them. I want them to be willing to lay down their lives for me. And when they reach an age, as much as you have plans and dreams, and every parent does, for goodness, I want to be able to do things in their lives that you may not agree with. Do we believe our children belong to God? Yeah, for a little while. Do we believe that God has a right to them? That's what these men were thinking of. Once Ed McCulley got through this thing, I'm an athlete. I'm a football player. I'm a speech leader. I'm good at law. I'm this and this and this. Once you got through all of that and thought, God has a claim on my life that I may not agree with. Am I willing to give my life to Him? The mission field is not for leftovers. Yokels like me, walking around the south side, this sort of thing. I served with incredibly sharp people. We were at a missionary conference in Columbia, and we're all the men, 40 of us sitting around. This guy worked as an electrical engineer. This guy worked as a mining engineer. This guy was a research scientist for Firestone, helping develop the radial tire. And on and on and on. And these guys were there because one reason. God laid on their heart to take the gospel. The man who was a research scientist, I'll tell you a story quickly in the end, for Firestone, Bill Morris. He was an elder in his assembly. He did some Bible teaching. He had this job and he owned 5 apartment houses. He got the Mission magazine like you do, but he read it. Okay, I'm sorry. But he read it. And he's driving home one night because he had to keep these apartment houses in repair, therefore his retirement, his future. And the thought came to him, Bill, if I wanted to ask you to do something for me, would you be able to do it, or are you too bogged down? And he said it was like a bolt of lightning. Where did this come from? Now he went home and he mentioned to his wife, Doris. She had been reading the Mission magazine about Columbia. She said some of the stuff in Columbia was interesting. He said, yeah, I've been interested. They didn't go right away. He sold the houses for about 5 years. They didn't have any idea what God was going to do, but they were going to be ready at any moment to respond. Wow. And he was one of the best evangelists we had. The character. He's a really sharp guy, I say. He could walk around a block, knock on doors, and when he got finished, he'd have 10 people committing to a Bible study. Dick and I could walk around the door and have nobody and sit and drink tea. Don't say, what's the matter with us? And we took Bill with us once. And he went around 4 or 5 blocks. And he says, here, all these people have Bible studies. How do you do that? Piece of cake. Okay. Okay. Harvey Rogers, principal of a high school and basketball coach. The dream he had as a young man. Looking and reading and such. Wow. These stories can be told many times. Parents, if your child is thinking, working, you need to guide them. You certainly need to encourage them, but you need not discourage them. There should be on our part a recognition that God has absolute claims in their lives, whether we like it or not. Now, all of these came out well, but each one of them, Fleming, McCulley, and Udarian, went through some struggle and hurt because they knew, at least in the beginning, that there'd be opposition. And friends who oppose them, and friends who, why, what a waste of life. Well, we need to start thinking sometimes that all of these natural abilities we have, of course, will work out on the mission field. But all these natural abilities we have, doesn't God have a claim to them? Doesn't he have a right to say, no, I've got something else? Where does the sacrifice come in? The laying down of our lives. So parents, train your children to love the Lord, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, train them to be godly people. If they want to go to college, send them to college, help them. But if they start having these thoughts, don't oppose them. You might be fighting against God. And you don't want to do that. Thank you, Father, for the writings that we have about these men and the insights we have after 63 years. We're learning more and more and more about them. And we're in awe at the impact. Father, Elizabeth Elliott has shared with us through letters and writings of the incredible impact. She says thousands. I don't doubt it, Father. Help us in our days to realize that no matter how hard it is and how it's changed, that you have a right to call anybody, anytime, and that serving that way on the mission field is dying to self. And Father, we know that Ed McCulley died to self right here in Milwaukee. Right here, when he went to the law school. Help us to see that. I pray in Jesus' name.